Swing by John Daly's, located at 1907 Division Street in Nashville, tomorrow for a basketball watch party you do not want to miss. Brought to you by Good Boy Vodka. Enjoy $25 Good Boy Bucket specials, and 102.5 The Game will be on site from 5 to 7 p.m. with prizes and more. Don't miss it tomorrow, only at John Daly's. Willie Dunnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on Outkick. Hi, Chad. How are you?
Doing well, guys.
So, Chad, we were talking about this last week. I'm sure you've been talking about it as well. Vanderbilt has had the edge on Tennessee in sports this past year. Baseball swept Tennessee. The Vandy boys swept Tennessee last week. Men's basketball won 2 out of 3 against Tennessee. The women's basketball team won in Knoxville. Of course, there was Vanderbilt's win at Neyland Stadium near the end of the football season. Perhaps the rivalry won't be as one-sided as it was this year, but how much do you think the gap has closed between Tennessee and Vanderbilt athletics?
And I think right now it's completely closed. I think NIL has helped that, certainly. But, Vanderbilt, you know, you got to take it by a program-by-program thing when you compare both of them at this time. But, you know, this past weekend, the baseball series, 3 walk-offs. I mean, Tennessee blows a 5-run lead in the 9th. I mean, there's definitely some mojo. But no, look, NIL has helped. I think just competent coaches. I mean, how long did Vanderbilt for through just some bad hires? And once you figure it out and you get good leadership, we interviewed Mark Byington this week. Great dude, smart guy, really good basketball coach. I think they're going to set up well for success in basketball because of him and his leadership. Shea Ralph has done a terrific job with the women's program. We all know about Tim Corbin and how great he's been over the years. Clark Lee, took him a little while to figure out the system that would work at Vanderbilt, but he's figured it out now. So I think up and down, you just look at the coaches at Vandy, the resources they have, being able to pay players. There's a lot of Vanderbilt athletics. And I said about the men's team, it's no fluke. You know, it's no fluke where they were. They should have been seated higher than they were. I don't see this as some Cinderella story. I see it as a team and a program that's here to stay and should be a consistent winner. And I think we're going to see all that moving forward.
Chad, I'm sure you and Hutton talked about this. We're going to talk about this later in the program. LeBron James on that golfing podcast talking about Memphis. He joins the chorus of NBA players urging the Grizzlies to relocate to Nashville. Draymond Green talked about it. Stephen A. Smith has talked about it. If you're Adam Silver, NBA commissioner, how are you absorbing all of this when your most prominent player, your most prominent talking head on a major rights holder, are saying these things about the city of Memphis and Nashville?
Look, first off, this is a multiple things can be true at once type scenario, I think, with what LeBron is saying. I think most people, you know, they probably agree with LeBron. I don't think a lot of people are trying to spend, you know, vacation time or downtime in the city of Memphis. Now, that doesn't mean that Memphis doesn't have great history. That doesn't mean that Memphis isn't a better basketball town than Nashville or a lot of other places. It's a great basketball city. It's got a lot of rich character in that city, and it's a place where I'm fine that they have an NBA team. Now, what is Adam Silver going to do? Probably nothing, because Adam Silver doesn't have a lot of power, quite frankly. Adam Silver of the commissioners has not done a great job and doesn't hold the power of a Roger Goodell or some of the stronger commissioners we've seen over the years. And I think LeBron is going to say what he wants and he's going to do what he wants. But and he's built himself up to that platform. Now, this whole I can see where people are annoyed with LeBron James. Like, come on, man, you're a super rich guy and you got to stay in a Westin and not a Hilton or whatever it is. They complain about the hotel in Memphis and all of that. Like, I get how that comes across as tone deaf. The whole Grizzlies should move to Nashville thing, I'm perfectly fine with the Predators. Now, just my own personal taste, I'm a basketball guy before I am a hockey guy. So if you ask me, like, hey, you could swap the two. Do you want an NBA team, just face value, or a hockey team? I'll take the NBA team. That doesn't mean that the Grizzlies need to move to Nashville, right? Doesn't mean the Grizzlies need to replace the Predators or anything like that. I want this city to get a Major League Baseball team. That's what I feel like is next for the city of Nashville, and I really want to see that happen. I'm not pining for an NBA team right now, but I do think that LeBron James said what a lot of people probably think about Memphis when they visit. It's just, it's different coming from him as a messenger, giving his place in the sport.
Well, you got to get through all the stuff first with the Major League Baseball team before you even think about bringing a NBA team, let alone we talked about bringing a WNBA team here. So if anything comes first, I think it would be baseball and WNBA rather than NBA.
And I don't know about you guys. I wouldn't want both. Like, I wouldn't want two winter sports playing 82 games, right? Like, I'm with you, D-Mace. Give me a baseball team first. Give me a WNBA team. Like, I'm not even focused on the NBA because I still think that Nashville, as much as it's grown, is an either-or scenario. Like, both aren't going to work. It's not big enough. You need the Preds or you need an NBA team. The Preds are already here. But, yeah, I don't, again, NBA is the least of what I want to see next for the city of Nashville.
Now, Alabama's AD Greg Burns has come out and said that the SEC championship game should be eliminated. He said the championship game doesn't, in a sense, doesn't fit the format that is being played now. Back when he established it, it was a big thing. Now with the growing number of playoff teams, and we don't know where this thing is going to end. Hopefully it ends at 12. But he's saying the game that is played now is not fit for what they're doing as far as the college football playoff. What do you think they will eventually eliminate this, or do you just think this is something that is going to continue to be talked about?
Well, I think it on its conference championship games as a whole, I really do. And here's why. And here's why college sports is where it is right now. It's because every decision is being made for money. And what has happened was the SEC championship game and Big Ten championship game and everything else, it was created as a revenue driver. You know, back in 1992 when the SEC championship game started, it was a way for the league and the teams to make more money with a game at the end of the year that you could make a lot of money with television and everything else on. And they decided that's the route to go. Well, now that we found a shinier, richer object, which is the college football playoff, and you can expand it, makes them more money, and they want to jump to that. So I think every decision is being made with money in mind right now, which isn't always the best way to do it. So, yeah, I do think that they are going to replace that championship weekend with the start of whatever long-form college football playoff we're going to see. I'm with you. I hope it doesn't go too much past 12, but I think we all know it's probably going to go to 24 and maybe beyond at some point because they can continue to print money the more and more teams they put in that thing. And to do that, they're going to have to start playing playoff games that week.
Now, Chad, Coach Cal was on ESPN earlier this morning. They were talking about asking him about the Final Four. And he was talking about, you know, they asked him about, well, do you see a sort of young team winning it or an older team? And we know that Michigan has an older team. And he talked about sort of trying to phase out of that and it being unfair to the 17 and 18-year-olds when they're coming in because they have to wait on you to try to go out and see if one of these guys that are, you know, fifth or sixth-year seniors, are they going to transfer and can you get them? Are they going to ever be able to sort of nip that in the bud? Because I ask that because of the European players. They are still allowed to come over here, even though they play professionally. They're still allowed to come over here, and if there's a scholarship for them, they're allowed to sign it. So how can they sort of navigate that?
You know, it's in talking to Mark Byington this week, D-Mace, he said, you got to get old, you got to stay old in college basketball. Now, that doesn't mean you're not going to bring in high school seniors to come in as freshmen in your program and try to keep them around. But I do think that if you have the budget to do it, and they're talking about these 15 to 20 programs going well north of $10 million for their roster. Tennessee and Vanderbilt are two of them that both have been reported will be at $10 million or above with what they're going to pay their roster next year. If you can do that, it really limits the amount of guys you're going to bring in if they're not Nate Ament or they're not Darius Acuff Jr., right? If you got a guy that you're going to spend big for that's going to come in and be a big-time player right away, then you do that. But the days of we're going to bring in five guys or four guys and they're going to be 3 and 4 stars and we're going to stick with them and develop them. Now, those are being developed at Illinois State for you. You're going to go to those programs and pick the guys you want to pay as juniors and seniors that the development's already out of the way. So there is a route. It's not great for culture. It's not great for team chemistry. But there is a route to go where you can just spend money every year in the portal, maybe bring in one freshman, and give yourself a transfusion of older talent every single year where your fan base doesn't even really know the players. They just know the team's going to look different year to year. And I think that's what John Calipari is talking about. They're going to go scout the G League bench and the Euro League bench. They're not going to go scout 17, 18-year-old high school seniors anymore. And that's the way the game is moving because the developmental part of it, it's not high school anymore. It's low majors. It's mid majors. That's where the game is being developed. Then you just go get those guys from those rosters. You bring them into an SEC or Big Ten or the top Big 12 schools, and you're ready to roll with a bunch of 22 to 24-year-olds.
Talking to Chad Withrow, Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow. And, Chad, speaking of that, I know you had a chance to talk to Coach Byington. Did you get any sense at all? And just what are you hearing about Tyler Tanner and the decision he's got to make? Obviously, I'm sure Vanderbilt would love to have him back, but it's going to be a very big decision.
Yeah, Willie, I did ask him about it. And the answer that he gave wouldn't give me a ton of confidence as a Vanderbilt fan, but he was just very supportive of Tyler. I mean, he talked about how, hey, this guy's a stud. He said, I think he's an NBA player. But obviously, we'd love to have him back. But he said twice, I think he's an NBA player. So I don't know if that means, you know, if he's my kid, I'm telling him to go ahead and go in the draft and start getting paid in the NBA. Or if he thinks, hey, he's going to be the highest paid player in college basketball in the transfer portal, he's likely to leave because he's going to get money somewhere else. But here's what I know about Vanderbilt and their commitment. If you're paying $10 million or north of that for your roster at Vanderbilt, I feel like Tyler Tanner, if he's playing in college basketball, is going to get a ton of money to come back to Vandy. So I don't know how to take it when he mentioned the NBA twice when I asked him about it. But, I think that's a million-dollar question. And for Tyler Tanner, it's probably a $3 to $4 million question. Because that's what he could make at Vanderbilt or elsewhere, maybe even more than that.
I think it's a really interesting question from a, you know, for lack of a better term, let's call it a salary cap decision. How much is too much for one player? If your budget is $10 million, if you pay one guy $4 million, can you build a roster or can you build just as good a roster by spreading that money around? It's becoming something that programs in a lot of different sports have to make decisions on.
Well, and Willie, so it's what you give up, right, on your roster. Like, okay, Vandy can pay, you know, let's say it's 3.5, 4, whatever. But in doing that, they can't pay Chandler Bing, let's say, a very promising freshman who can get some money on the open market, but they're going to have to pay him less, way less than other schools to retain their roster. I think you're seeing this at Tennessee right now. I just saw that Cade Phillips has entered the transfer portal. Cade Phillips, a great hustle guy, good rebounder, a good defender. Couldn't stay healthy with his shoulder at Tennessee, but Tennessee can't pay all their big guys, right? They can't pay J.P. Estrella and Dwayne Brown and Jalen Carey, who, by the way, is going to have to take a pay cut if he's going to stay at Tennessee after this season. So he's got a decision to make. Just all of these either-or choices. I think Tennessee's going to have a decision to make between Bishop Boswell or Amari Evans, who's a promising freshman. Because both guys can't have the role that they want on the team, and they both can't make, you know, more than the other. Someone's going to have to get paid more. There's going to have to be a bigger financial investment in one or the other. So I think it's fascinating every offseason now to see the roster management of the coaches and who they value and where they want to spend their money. And, Willie, it's a great question because the Tyler Tanner dilemma of you could pay him to come back, but in doing so, you might lack in the front court a little bit. Or somewhere right. else, do you make that call? That's why these coaches get paid so much money, because they're the ones that have to make the decision and live with it.
Yeah, just because, I mean, they've got so many seniors leaving, they have to get a bunch of new players, and they're going to need resources to do that. I also wonder from the other side, Chad, a player like Tanner, and there's probably a handful of others that are in this boat. Let's just say that the choices are you take, I don't know, let's just say $3.5 million. Sounds crazy to say, but that's what it would take to come back to Vanderbilt versus being, say, a low first-round pick, where that's a gamble because you don't know until you get picked. But that, you know, that's going to pay you somewhere between $2 and $3 million. What's the better choice? Keep developing on the college level for more money than you'll get your first year in the NBA, or start the clock in the NBA?
Well, and fans are going to overreact and get upset regardless, because not everybody's LSU football, right? It feels like Lane Kiffin got every transfer he wanted and then gave him as much money as he wanted. He even went over their NIL budget with the money he was spending on that roster. But yeah, you're right. I mean, everyone else has difficult, really tough choices to make. Tennessee getting Tyler Lundblad from Belmont so quickly. Well, what is Tennessee overpaying him to come to Knoxville so quickly? It's a lot, right? I mean, they had to promise him a lot.
That guy can shoot, by the way. Holy cow, can he shoot?
Yeah, he shot 49% a year ago.
Unbelievable.
From three. But it's what Tennessee needed more than anything, was outside shooting. That's where they struggled this year. So Rick Barnes said, this is the guy we want. Let's make it happen. But to bring that guy in for 3 days, to say you're not going to visit anywhere else, we're going to commit, we're going to get this thing done right now before the portal even officially opens, that costs a lot of money. So where's that money going to leave now? Because Tennessee's not going to return everybody. Cade Phillips is already gone, right? So no matter what, you're going to upset someone in your program. You're going to upset fans. The best coaches out there are going to be the best at the balancing act of what to pay certain players, when to be okay with letting them walk, and then bringing in the right guys that fit whatever existing culture is there. Rick Barnes has done a great job of that in the transfer portal era. He's had, what, three straight, I think, SEC newcomers of the year with Gillespie, with Lanier, and with Connect. So he's trying to do that again, but that's, to me, that's how you maintain a program now. It's not about getting four-year guys. It's about every year making sure that you hit with enough of the guys you bring in.
Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on Outkick has been our guest on D-Mace, Ving, and Adonik. He joins us every Friday. Chad, as always, thank you so much for your time. Happy Easter. We'll catch up next week.
Always, guys. Happy Easter. Have a great weekend.
615-737-1025. We'll take your reaction to what Chad had to say. 615-737-1025. Tee it up with us at the 5th Annual 615 Open, May 28th. At Hermitage Golf Course, we are once again supporting Folds of Honor to help them fund life-changing scholarships for families of America's fallen heroes. Register now to play or sponsor at 615open.com.